Good afternoon and welcome to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM. As always, we're here until the hour of 6. And we have a very interesting topic, you know, continental-wide. We decided to go with, decided not to talk about Namibia, but yeah, we're still talking about Africa.
Or internationally, but rather,
you know, just decided to
stay on the continent, you know.
Yeah, with a few, you know, skips here and there, international skips.
But at least our discussion is very peaceful. I mean, we're not here to kick anyone in the eyeballs.
No, we're not.
No, we're not. Plus, we're also here talking about a very strange thing. After Homer and I spoke about this at the start of the year,
yeah, we
now find ourselves looking... Okay, I'm perplexed, Helmut. I don't know how surprised you are in terms of how quickly this was resolved. Because remember you and I back in February, cited that this was a 20-year-old conflict.
Yeah.
And just in the first 6 months, first 5 months of an American president's newest term, he achieved what no one on the African continent has been trying for 20 years to achieve.
Well, not just that, Dwight. You have to understand that, this proves our points. By our points, I mean me and Donald Trump. That, just me and Donald Trump. Look,
there's a lot of people that would be angry with you for support for aligning your thinking with him.
With Donald Trump.
Yeah. I also see the sense.
Look, allow me to make my point. The thing is, this makes Donald Trump a diplomatic genius.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It's either that or there's somewhere out there, you know, with a very nice gift like the one the Qatari gave to Trump, you know,
And they were involved in this as well.
Of course they did. Yeah. Of course they did. You have to, I don't think we had shown that, but, you and I,
Not about them, because that engagement happened right after our show.
When they met.
Like a week or 2 weeks after. Actually, it even happened after the AU head of state summit.
After they refused.
To see each other there. Yeah. And after the Eastern African engagement, to see each other there.
Nope. Look, SADC and the East African community, because the East African community is DRC is both a member of the East African community and SADC.
Yeah. Rwanda is
Rwanda is just East African community, yeah, and DRC is just SADC.
Yeah. No, both.
Both East African community and SADC.
Yeah, but Rwanda is just East
African. It's just East African community.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, it was a very sort of like fascinating to see the heads of the East African community. I think that I'm not sure was or still is the Tanzanian president Suluhu Hassan, and the president of Zimbabwe, coming together to sort of like to figure out a diplomatic solution to, because the war was escalating bad at that, so badly at that point. So they came up with a diplomatic solution of trying to bring the two leaders together to sort of like, figure it out, or, talk about it, instead of just letting a bunch of, trigger happy guys run wild. And these guys did not want to see each other then. They did not want to see each other at the, at the AU summit. And then the Qatari said, Komiso.
Do you really think they said Komiso?
Qatari?
Yeah.
How do you think Komiso would sound in with an Arabic accent?
No, I'm not asking them using that phrase. Do you really think it was the Qataris highlighted to them? Listen, it's you guys have to, like a head teacher speaks to two schoolboys busy fighting each other, dusting each other out there in the schoolyard. Do you really think the Qataris approached it like a school, like a headmaster, principal attitude? Or was it one about, hey, listen, guys, I can invite you guys to a nice braai and a nice boiki, here's some nice kebab.
Look, the question I can't help, the question anyone cannot help but asking themselves is, What magic trick did the Qatari have?
Exactly.
That the AU, SADC, and I, in East African community, have not used in the past, throwing the United Nations peacekeeping in that one, because they've been
UNESCO.
Yeah, they've been in there. What trick didn't these guys come up in a, in 20 years?
Achieve total and complete.
Absolutely nothing.
What was that other, what's that word that they say? Total and complete, sort of like, neutralization of hostilities.
Yeah.
Because you and I thought that at the start of this year, when North and South Kivu, fell to M23 and FDLR, under FDLR control. If you don't know who FDLR is, dear listeners, FDLR is the, it is literally the militia forces that came as a result of the, if we can call it what it is, technically the ethnic conflict between the Banyamulenge that were based, that are based in eastern DRC, that neighborhood of DRC, and obviously because they had been targeted by the, not just by the DRC governments of today, but also of yesteryear, which actually stemmed from the 90s. And it was, it's technically been a hot zone, which you can extend for like to say 30 years. Because all of this, which we realized at the start of the first talk, was, it was based upon actions that were committed by the previous head of state of a unified Zaire, Mobutu Sese Seko. He, you know, he actually wanted to chase the Banyamulenge out of eastern DRC by trying to disenfranchise them. And which was a negative, because 1994 happened on the other side of the border. And the, you know, there was a lot, there was a mass exodus and migration of people from one of the groups in Rwanda who actually ran into eastern DRC, and then that led to the flare-up of conflict. And fast forward all the way to 2025, that's where we find ourselves today. So just as the basis, so that you just know what were the contributing factors, it started back in the 90s. And it's technically an unresolved border dispute, conflict zone, from the 1994 Rwanda genocide, and prior to that specifically, the other particular conflict scenarios that stemmed from the treatment of the Banyamulenge in eastern DRC.
Look, one thing I think that's worth pointing out before we even dive into this topic is that, a peace deal is an accomplishment, because people don't have to die anymore.
Yeah.
I'm really hoping, and you have to understand that these people have signed, I think, several peace deals that all went down the drain.
Yeah.
Really hoping this one holds. Because natural resources and basically everything, that's secondary. Human life, obviously, you know, takes primary.
Mm.
Yeah. If bombs are not exploding and people are just going about their life, because if they say, you know, if they suspect some multinational taking advantage of them somewhere, they can at least mobilize, go on a protest, and, you know, just have a community where, you know, and an environment where they basically can raise kids that are not, you know, born and raised in front of guns.
Yeah.
Because that screws up your head big time. Now, the mass execution of mostly young people that had to be conducted by the, you know, that was conducted by the DRC government, was that late last year or earlier this year.
Mm.
You know, for the most part of that, I blame the conflict that's going on, because most of those kids have seen nothing but conflict, right?
Yeah. Commercial.
Elara kano jitu okukupa on dando dilipevi mi pumbi wato pumga esku keje ta shori tere mwe makinego nyago bonita long life geni moga khamano ke sere no logo no wei o sindo mino go wei no wei osho okay jine thin timbu enju harumba kanifwa yo real good ke sere mino go heta tu no wei no senda o mino go wei no wei tinda ufuta shivuri vepo ShopRite price ziriko se goga khamano gayuri nuvo oko ShopRite akuke.
Welcome back. So, where was I? That's, you know, just to clarify that, a peace deal, you know, at least, from my, you know, in my opinion, I don't care who makes the peace deal. Mm. As long as there is a peace deal and that is held by both parties and people are not being blown to smithereens.
Yeah.
So back to the mass execution of, mass execution of mostly young people that were, executed in DRC. You have to understand that, these are people that are mostly in their, late teens and early twenties. Now, what these guys did is, they actually went from one village to another committing some of the worst crimes you can ever imagine.
Yeah.
If you can't imagine it because you saw it once in a horror movie, they have done it. So, wherever they went, they left a lot of victims in their wake. I just forgot the group's name. That's what they called themselves.
Yeah, that gang. That boy.
Yeah,
gang.
It's basically a gang group.
Yeah.
And they did the worst thing you can imagine. But the government of DRC came, intervened, and then they this whole thing of assumed innocent until proven guilty, that doesn't happen in DRC. We just line you up with a firing squad and then say your last words. I know.
Well,
Jesus, okay.
At least they were publicly tried. That was the funny thing.
And
I'm not saying funny as in comedy, dear listeners. It's just to say it was weird because you see it on Al Jazeera that there's going to be a mass execution of a group of young men who are mostly below 20, but they were a violent youth gang.
Yeah.
A very violent youth gang. And you are actually right, Helmut, because here's the thing that was the biggest concern of that eastern part of DRC. There was a lack of safety and security. There was no police presence. The soldiers that were patrolling there were predominantly the Southern African military mission, the SADC military mission to DRC. And those guys were there to try and how a peacekeeping force is supposed to be is that they show up and say, we're here to help you. Now, if you go on SAMI DRC's website, that's now the Southern African military mission to the DRC. They don't say that they're to help with peace and security. They literally say we're there to help DRC. Now that obviously meant
sends a wrong message to Rwanda.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That tells Rwanda, like the whole time, like what Putin has been telling the whole world, NATO is not there peacefully expanding. NATO is there antagonizingly expanding.
You know, the irony in Russia and NATO is that before the fall of the Soviet Union, NATO was scared of Soviet expansion. Now it's the other way around.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's like they just switched the roles, because you have to understand the Soviet Union really expanded into Western Europe.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, after the fall of the Soviet Union, you'd think organizations like NATO would actually come to this organization have served its purpose. We've stopped the expansion of the Soviet Union. Actually, we have brought about the fall of the Soviet Union.
Yeah.
So how about we just move on to a different? They started expanding. It's like, so they just switched the, human beings. We never learn. Now, so where was I? Irrespective of who signs the deal, things like the mass execution and all the atrocities that were committed by the M23 of day by day, you are reading about news of young people and you are reading about news of of people getting killed, and that's actually just the tip of the iceberg of what happens in a war zone. Because if you just follow up, if you want to understand the, if you want to know the gravity of war, ask the victims. Ask the victims. Now, the reason why I point that out is because, a lot of American soldiers, came from Iraq saying that they are traumatized. And thanks to social media, Iraqis are coming out and saying, you were traumatized. Are you kidding me? You did the bombing and the raping, but you are telling me you are traumatized. No. Ask the victim on the ground. War is just ugly, which is why every time starts saying, you know what, let's just go to war. I'm like, dude, take a beer or two, you'll be fine. There is nothing good about war. Not only people dying, but, mass killing, mass rape, mass torture, mass everything is in war. So a peace deal was struck. Shout out. I cannot believe I, you know, well, you know, at this point, I think it's safe to say even the you know, even, you know, even Lesotho is saying, I mean, well, chance of, well, we don't like you, but thank you very much for that peace deal.
Yeah.
So peace deal, bravo. But, as in everything else, I mean, as in everything in life, nothing is for free. And again, it will take anyone, you know, it will take anyone a lot to convince me that the deal is, saving human life is the primary reason behind the peace deal. Mm. Because if that was the case, there would be a peace deal between Hamas and Israel right now. Now, because of that, let's get back to just, I mean, this is why I like Trump. He was just honest and to the point. And my favorite part is watching Tshisekedi answer questions on Fox News about the deal.
Mm.
Yeah, that was my favorite part.
The funniest thing is, Helmut, is that they went literally to the White House to sign this deal. They didn't even go to like Addis Ababa in front of the AU, because there was an AU representative. There was a Qatari representative. Then there is a, there was a special envoy or special negotiator. What's the guy's name? Basad Musa or something? Musa Basad or something like that, that worked for the US State Department on this negotiation. But here's the funny thing. Like you said a little bit earlier, we don't know what the Qataris used to bring these two heads of state together. Because the Qataris back in March just said, hey, you know what? We invited these guys because the situation in Eastern DRC is becoming out of control. We'd like to achieve something, you know, tangible. But here's what is also funny, Hamoud. The Qataris also hosted peace talks between Afghanistan's Taliban and the US back in 2022.
Yeah.
When the US withdrew out of the Taliban. Out of Afghanistan.
Afghanistan after... That's interesting. That was also after 20 years.
That's also after 20 years.
Hmm.
So Qatar is obviously highlighting itself as being, you know, a sort of like a go-to mediator in diplomacy and in global peace negotiations. But then we sit with a fundamental question here, Helmut. What did the AU get wrong? Okay, we know ultimately what SADC got wrong, because SADC viewed the DRC as being, Jay's my bra, you are my bra, you know, we are together. Even if it's against a fellow African, we are together. Because that was the attitude that Ramaphosa was showing off to Kagame. And Kagame kept saying, but on that website, on your mission's website, it literally says that you guys are not there to help with peace and security. You guys are there to help the DRC, which is open-ended to say, we're here as allies in the fight against me.
You know, I like my corner, don't get me wrong.
Mm.
Earlier this week, one thing I pointed out was that, look, I totally understand why we're colonized. Because we have this mentality that a solution to African problems is out there.
Mm.
Now, Ocampos, the representative, first the chief prosecutor to the ICC, sat with Mehdi Hassan, I think somewhere sat with Mehdi Hassan about 5 or 6 years ago. And, Mehdi Hassan was asking one question. Does the ICC target African leaders? And, it's a very long interview, but part of Mr. Campos' response was simple. We didn't invite African leaders to be part of the ICC. They asked us if they can be part of the ICC. And, Ocampos points out that, Nelson Mandela was one of those people that were telling us, that were basically saying, we have a lot of, people that are clinging on to power. That's a fancy way of saying a bunch of dictators, on our continent. Now, we need a body that can sort of like solve this problem so you can have, you know, not only smooth transition of power, but so that people can understand that, term limit is a thing.
Mm.
Yeah. The situation in Togo right now is completely different. Now, So we signed a bunch of laws. Then we started seeing a lot of people being prosecuted. You have, a lot of people being investigated and basically, you know, facing arrest warrants and prosecution. Was that in 2015 during the AU summit when Omar al-Bashir came and attended the 2015, attended the AU summit in South Africa. And every Western guy was screaming at the top of their lungs, well, you're signatory to the ICC, someone with an ICC arrest warrant is in your country, arrested them, blah, blah, blah. Was that Jay-Z?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was like, yeah, nah, homeboy. It was nice meeting you, buddy. Have a good one. Don't play with Jacob Zuma. Yeah.
I still don't know how the South Africans got that guy in. I mean, that guy.
I know. So.
And you know what's the worst part?
Yeah.
I read in last week or the week before, the one of the ousted party leaders from that MK party had written to Jay-Z to tell him, hey, listen, your daughter is out of control in parliament. The one that's being taken to court, Duduzane.
Yeah. Duduzane? Another one is a well-known troublemaker.
Yeah, she's apparently out of control and her behavior is unbecoming of a senior party leader. And then that same guy that wrote the first letter about Jacob Zuma's daughter also had to write another letter about the party whip in the parliament.
Oh man.
Who's also another woman. Obviously, it seems like one guy is an issue with two ladies of the party who are senior political representatives in the parliamentary process. And, you know, apparently these letters were written to Jacob Zuma. But here's the thing. It's not Zuma responding. The party responds to the letters to say, no, these are rubbish letters. Where do these letters go? You've got to love African politics.
You're gonna laugh, but I swear.
You know what's the worst part, Ned? These letters were leaked. These two letters were leaked to the South African press. And that party jumps up and says, no, it's rubbish letters. Who cares about those letters?
Yeah, who cares about
those? That guy's not even in the party anymore. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
But yeah.
Thinking that, probably, the solution to our problems are out there.
Yeah.
Now, one thing that you see here is, obviously, this is not rocket science. And I like how, during the whole, interview of Tshisekedi with Fox and, interview of Tshisekedi and Fox and also Donald Trump's take on the subject. One thing that was made clear is that, a resource is at the center of it all.
Mm-hmm.
That's the painful part. Resource is a priority. That means if the resource, if the resource part of the deal, falls apart, then we're back to square one.
Yeah. But here's the thing, Hamid. The agreement, remember I shared with you the agreement.
Yeah.
I've got the agreement open here. Nowhere does it say explicitly the resource is the cornerstone of this discussion.
No one is going to say that.
Not even in the Qatari statement does it say explicitly. It just highlights, the resource and mineral rich eastern parts of the DRC.
Yeah.
And also to consider this particular discussion, the Western media specifically around this engagement have highlighted, Donald Trump wants resources from the African region, which is a bit peculiar because it says nothing here. Says nothing here.
Now, that's one of the reasons why, you're right. I totally understand why it's dominating, even mainstream media.
Yeah.
Because again, in an interview, at least the part that I saw of, on Fox of President Tshisekedi on Fox, two things stood out to me. DRC's relationship with China and the US access to the resources.
Yeah.
Did Homeboy even read that thing before answering those questions?
I used to buy in data hoping it will last, then switch to Paratus. Buying gigabytes is so old school. With our mobile LTE prepaid packages, you take charge. As we invest in time on our network enjoying the freedom of uncapped data. When you buy a 1-day, 7-day, 14 or 30-day package, you get uncapped data usage. For the duration of the package, no matter how much data you use. Explore our range of Paratus mobile LTE prepaid packages and enjoy the speeds of up to 10 megabytes per second. And most importantly, remove the uncertainty uncertainty about how long your data will last. Contact us today at 083-300-1000 or visit our website at www.baratas.africa/Namibia. Terms and conditions apply.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa Eva Tero ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe utite opoye ekukulile. Oshafa fana nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwana. Onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi nawa. Nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshefa omarudi dayo loka. Opone ushendife nawa nokumona oijabo ili nawa. Ninge pata fanona, Monica ko Eagle FM, onore tatuimwe bali heali, nola natu, heali bali no heali. Ileko, derewa, nora hetatu natu, bali o hetatu matatu, o mafelane, Eagle FM, the eye.
Just a minute past the hour of five, welcome back to our interesting discussion, which is let me stick to the word interesting because, like I pointed out earlier, for me, peace deal was reached.
Mm.
People don't have to run for their lives anymore.
But here's the thing, Hamoud.
Yeah.
The running is probably still happening. Why?
You bet.
In this peace deal, it highlights, in this deal, remember, dear listeners, just before the ad break, we touched on a notion that said we cannot find any concrete indicator specifically about the US being involved in this peace negotiating process purely
for access to resources.
Yeah, access to resources discussion. Yeah. We can't see it because it literally says here on the US State Department's website where the deal is up there. It's free to use, free to see, free for you to access and read through. What it literally speaks towards. And it is primarily just a legal document that highlights refugees, internally displaced people and persons and humanitarian considerations.
Yeah.
A joint security coordination mechanism. Disengagement, disarmament and integration of non-state armed groups. And the first particular starting point was territorial integrity and prohibition of hostilities. Now that's just the first four, if you can call it like pillars of this agreement.
Non-state armed group. Nice. Please go on.
Because here's the thing, Herman. Mm-hmm. This agreement is languaged in a direction to say, let us neutralize the hostility of the FDLR.
Yeah.
Now remember in our discussion at the start of this year, we identified two armed groups that were fighting each other, that were the proxies of DRC and Rwanda.
Yeah.
M23/FARDC is the one armed by Rwanda, and the FDLR is sort of like the unofficial military of DRC that is armed by the Congolese army.
So this is just this is why I'm not a huge fan of any armed conflict. So basically you have, every time that, my country wants to fight you, not in a direct, like, invasion type of way, you find a bunch of armed guys, I find a bunch of armed guys.
Yeah. But here's the thing. Let's now say it's happening in my borders.
Yeah.
You are funding the guys to be in my borders. Yeah. I'm funding my guys.
To defend your borders.
To defend my borders. But I have an army and I have a police force.
Yeah,
you have an army and you have a police force.
But none of us is using our officially established military.
Yeah.
Guys.
So it looks like
just a bunch of guys going rogue.
Yeah. It looks like a war that is not really a war, which leads to that example that you mentioned about the young men that were mass executed by the Congolese police.
Yeah.
At the start of the year after being found guilty for all those atrocities.
Yeah.
Now, yes, international media went like, how could you? You know,
Human Rights Watch.
This is a human rights scenario.
Yeah.
But then the Congolese police will tell you, but these young men have only known one way.
That's violence.
Being violent to others. They can't live in peace. They can't be rehabilitated. We don't have the facilities to put them away.
Anyone that was in the northern part of Namibia, I'm not sure about northern part of Namibia and basically the southern part of Angola was somewhat peaceful compared to the central and actually the parts of Njamba, like that part was just absolute chaos up to, you know, obviously, you know, up to 2002.
Mm.
Yeah. So, everyone that, it was the late 90s and early 2000s, you know, the conflict escalated, you know, further south. That's when it started displacing a lot of people in the, you know, that's when you see a bunch of, that's when you find stories of a bunch of guys crossing the river, yeah, and causing chaos on the Namibian side, especially. I mean, they will just, hold a lot of people hostage. And they obviously harmed a lot of people, and they stole pretty much, you know, anything they can put their, they could put their hands on.
Mm.
A lot of people, especially where, you know, especially even the village where I come from, they, especially those ones that were old enough to see what was going on in the early 2000s,
mm,
we had a taste of what civil war is like,
mm,
and it was bad.
Mm.
And, I mean, we're not in the middle of a war zone. This, yeah, is just a bunch of guys that were just crossing over one night and causing all the... Now, imagine living in that constant chaos.
Mm.
Which is, that was Angola from 1975 to 2002. There, 1975 to 2002, there were people that were born, raised, grow old, and the only thing they knew were...
That's almost 30 years.
Yeah. All they knew was bullets flying.
Yeah.
So, that mass execution, of course, to this day, there's a lot of criticism towards the government of DRC in a way that they handled that. But, I don't think there's anyone that's, that's going to DRC and then sit with the victims.
Yeah.
And ask them, okay, can we hear your side of the story? Because this one SS officer I just read about, I just forgot the homeboy's name, that caused a lot of chaos. Because he was, I think he's one of those guys that was running, the SS guys. And I only found out today is that that the SS were so bad, even the Nazi German was like, yo, guys, dial it down.
Yeah, but there's a lot of things that that are pretty bad that come from that,
now,
that chapter
is,
of human history.
Now, the thing is, after the war came to an end, we're talking about Second World War came to an end, a lot of SS officers were, most of them found themselves on the side, on the side of mob justice.
Mm.
Because even though they could not remember the faces of all their victims, the victims remember all their faces.
Do you know what was an issue of?
And boy, oh boy.
Of specifically what those guys created.
Yeah.
Those guys were the issue as to why the Soviets didn't easily take German prisoners of war. Because of the failed Austrian painter's hatred for communists.
Yeah.
He actually signed in a decree that because the communists believed in man, woman, child has to defend the nation state.
Yeah.
Nah. Women were in the army, in the Soviet army. They were women. They were the only army that used women.
Ah.
The Soviets.
This time everyone was still, just they stick to the kitchen.
Yeah. If anyone has ever watched Jude Law's movie, Enemy at the Gates, where the one guy carries the rifle and the other guy carries the bullets.
Wait, what?
Yeah. They had, because of the industrial reform that they were still trying to go through, they couldn't manufacture rifles quick enough. The Soviet companies, or the communist companies that the Soviet state owned. The downside was literally that they had most mass conscription. They didn't have mass, They didn't have mass enlistment. They had mass conscription. So everyone was immediately converted into...
So you just drafted.
Yeah, you just drafted. Doesn't matter if the person was previously in the First World War or not. Everyone was drafted. It led to a scenario where the one guy carries the gun, the rifle.
Mm-hmm.
The other guy carries the bullets.
Because they don't have enough guns for everyone.
Yeah. They have too much. And remember, much of the hardware that was used in the Second World War was hardware that also came from, in some cases, from the First World War.
Yeah.
There's a very weird story that I heard from another guy, another IT friend of mine who's a major gamer himself, that said, he told me, Dwight, did you know that the American army back in, when they were still in Afghanistan and Iraq, they are using bullets that they manufactured in the 70s. Because of the Cold War and the Vietnam War, they have to use those bullets up.
That's the problem. That's the problem with war. Because at the end of the war, you have so much arms.
You don't know what to do with all this.
Yeah, that's where the Lord of War movie by Nicolas Cage
came in.
That's where it came in. Because it
shows. And who did he fund? Liberia. Remember? He was selling to, when the Liberian Civil War broke out. He was also in, was it Mogadishu?
Victor Bout provided armed Angolan rebels.
Yeah.
So if you are from the northern part of Namibia, chances are very high you survived some of Victor Bout's merchandise. No, guns is such a dirty word. But
it's actually a good thing that you're speaking of, Helmut, because, it's not known in human history, or let's say rather say here in this African context, in Southern Africa, since we've never seen Europe, for example, like that SS example that you spoke of.
Yeah.
We've never seen Europe in a complete chaotic scenario. People who are history buffs, like what you and I do, we read a lot of history, we consume a lot of historical facts and documents, and we find, you know, certain things interesting, not exciting, because war has never been exciting, guys. But the interesting facts have been because of the actions of certain leaders. Now, remember, Hamoud, the Geneva Convention on Human Rights. I don't know if I'm pronouncing it correctly in terms of its naming order, but they already had a prisoners of war convention, meaning there was a treaty between countries back then when the League of Nations was started. And the Austrian painter was one of him and the Japanese emperor and Stalin. They were the only guys that literally wrote decrees or high-ranking orders to their militaries. Don't do this, don't do that, don't treat people like humans, prisoners of war, don't feed them, don't give them medical assistance.
Basically the opposite of the Geneva Convention.
Yeah. The Soviets with the German POWs, were treated worse than the Japanese POWs. The Japanese, the document that I watched as to why the Japanese were so anti-humanitarian aid to the American and British soldiers in the Pacific theater was primarily because the Japanese walked out of the League of Nations.
Yeah.
Now,
very nice cartoon on that the history books.
Yeah.
You know, with the League of Nations lying down and Japan just stepping on the League of Nations as they walk out.
Yeah. Now, that caricature of that cartoon, that cartoon's depiction of why Japan left was, remember that Japan and Abyssinia at that stage. The Empire of Abyssinia, which
AKA
was
Ethiopia.
AKA Ethiopia and Eritrea together.
Oh, yeah.
No? AKA Ethiopia, Eritrea, and Somalia together.
Wait, they're Somalia?
Yeah, they were together. That was the whole country, those three countries. Was that Abyssinia and Japan had requested for, in the founding document of the League of Nations, that it says that all men are equal. Now, remember back to our slave trade discussion that you highlighted there. The reason as to why the British went on their campaign to end the North Atlantic
Treaty. Commercial break.
So, you've got everything sorted for tomorrow?
Yeah, man. Meat, spice, poikis ready. Even got some playlists lined up, bro.
And the crew? They're all coming, right?
Howie, everyone's in. It's gonna be lekker.
Wait. What about the tassies?
Bruh,
you can't get it without tassim, bruh. It's like cabana without salsa, dog. Tassimber. Best together. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Great news. Imba just got even better. We have added brand new features.
So, welcome back, Home Run, blah, 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 Helmut and Dwight. So, what you are telling me is the League of Nations failed because some idiot thought...
Not an idiot. It was a planned move. So, remember...
To derail the organization?
Yes. So, remember...
That's genius.
Britain and France walked into the League of Nations. Mm-hmm. Firstly, they demanded reparations from the Germans, which is something that Namibia is still demanding. Okay, the Namibians that are not in government are demanding the reparations discussion. Not the Namibians that are in government, representing the other Namibians that we voted for last year.
That was Dwight. Go.
But it's a fact. It's a fact. You can't argue against the fact.
Yeah.
And I'm also the pro-reparations discussion. Mm-hmm. However, now, they technically set in motion a chain of events. The chain of events were being that the Americans have to bankroll the rebuilding and reconstruction of Europe,
yeah,
after the First World War. But Woodrow Wilson, the US president, can't say anything to the British and the French about their colonial properties and their colonial possessions. So that was a no-go area. And then the founding documents were one about, you know, that the victors, i.e., and it went like this, how some historians explained it. The British, the French, and the Americans dictate to the rest of the world what the League of Nations is supposed to be doing.
Ah.
Which then...
So, might is right.
Yeah, or my answer is the final one. So, you could obviously see where this template of the Security Council actually comes from. That there is always like these three or top three or top five
that are making decisions that
for the whole world.
Yeah.
So the Japanese, which were on the side of these guys, of the Americans, the British and the French. Remember when the British step into a war, it's four armies that they bring with.
Yeah.
Let me repeat that. If you ever fight against the UK, they bring in four armies. It's their army of the United Kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
It's the Canadian army.
Yep.
It's the Australian army.
Yeah.
And the New Zealand army.
Yep.
They automatically fall in there. When you view that particular scenario, then you obviously also realize what the French probably have. Hence the reason why no one in Namibia, even the political class of Namibia, they don't understand, and even the youth don't understand what's going on in the French-speaking African countries. There was this one mechanism the French created under Napoleon, known as the French Foreign Legion. How much you can become a French citizen by joining the French Foreign Legion? Do you know that?
Yeah, but during the... wait, wasn't that during the Second World War when some of them were literally shot at by their fellow servicemen after they demanded equal pay?
Exactly.
Yeah, I'm not fighting for someone like that.
Well, do you want to be shouted by the other guys, the other Europeans who don't consider you human? And that's now the other downside. What many people don't know is in the Second World War's theater itself, there was a lot of baggage that came from the First World War.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of baggage that was created in that cauldron, which is also a similarity you would see here in this Rwanda DRC peace discussion. Now, we propel things forward in terms of why Japan walked out.
Yeah.
Now, as if anyone goes and truly looks at the history books with regards to the founding of the League of Nations, there was a lot of negotiations taking place. Now, the Japanese were supplying the countries that were fighting. The guys that were on the Bayard side were the Austrians, the Italians, the Germans, who's the other nation? And the Ottomans. Because the Australians were fighting the Ottomans here in Syria, here in this eastern realm, just here above Lebanon there. They were fighting against against the Ottomans there. Because the Ottomans pushed from the east into Europe. The Austrians and the Germans were there in the central aspect, against the Russians on the left, on the Eastern Front, and against the other guys on the Western Front.
Man, human beings are brutal.
And you had the Italians trying to fight against, because remember, the Swiss were also in the First World War.
Yeah.
The Swiss had to defend themselves against the Italians. the Swiss and the Italians were fighting. Mm-hmm. Because the Italians were trying to capture territory from the Italians.
From the Italians or the Swiss?
No, sorry. The Italians were trying to capture territory from the Swiss. Because if anyone goes and looks at the population makeup of Switzerland, you've got Italian-speaking people, French-speaking people, and German-speaking people in Switzerland. And each one of them claim, what you call it, like a ethnic identity within the overall identity of Switzerland.
Yeah.
But they have designated zones, for example. You only find in southern Switzerland, Italian-speaking Swiss. Western Switzerland, French-speaking Swiss. Eastern and northern Switzerland, German-speaking Swiss. And that was the makeup of this country. Now, the downside here was, Helmut, it actually, in a way, the destabilization led to sort of like a house cleaning mechanism. But because this was a fight that the rest of the world didn't fight, but only these bunch of guys were fighting in Europe, mm-hmm. the rest of the world was like, you know what, we're still colonial Muppets, you know, we're still
we're busy fighting for our own survival here. So
in many cases, we didn't even know what the survival looked like.
Mm-mm.
Then rolls along, the negotiations start for League of Nations, and Japan must now, they weren't participating in this war, they were must now demanding, you know what, put a line in there, because the Japanese showed up with their lawyers as well, saying, put a line in there that says all men are equal. The Abyssinians were also like, sit him in. You know, I don't want to be playing, I don't want to be playing second fiddle, but that's my bra. You know, he's the one thinking everything through. Then the English and the French check like, oh, okay, this will create an issue because we still have colonial possessions.
We still have plantations that need, you know, that line would derail.
You were still on the plantation element of things, Helmut. These guys were literally now like saying, we don't want to start something that leads to greater economic loss for us.
Mm-hmm.
And that's literally how those two thought. I keep forgetting the guy from the two prime ministers that were there. Those two guys were like, and I mean, if you ever read the memoirs or anything about what Woodrow Wilson thought about those two guys, the Frenchman and the French president and the English prime minister, he didn't like those two men. And Woodrow Wilson is not any African's best friend as well.
Nah.
He just, obviously, the Americans were working on the basis of implementing the Monroe Doctrine, which was that no European colonial power should be in the Western Hemisphere of the world, which is where the Americans are.
Yeah.
And that's the neighborhood and the playground.
You know, like, you know, this is our, yeah, I mean, it's like, I mean, that's the same mentality you find in drug dealers. Like, you know what? This part of town.
Yeah.
This is just for, you know, this is my territory.
From that street to that street.
Yeah. So if I find your boys operating their stuff here.
Yeah.
It's a gang war.
Yeah. And that was literally the sort of like the preceding discussions. You then end up with the hatred that then flows into like your SS discussion that you actually triggered me on from starting on. Because the downside here was, the failed Austrian painter did not like communists. Remember as to why he did not like them? Because he was not allowed to have a construction job, in Germany because he wasn't a member of a construction union. Only unionized people could work on construction sites in the reconstruction period of Germany after the First World War. Of, as they would say, Weimar Germany. Yeah, the Weimar Republic. Weimar Germany. The downside is he hated that a Jewish unionized construction foreman told him, I cannot employ you. Because the guy was almost fired from the site. I cannot employ you.
Is there a job that he, okay, minus the one that he held by force? Is there
Homeboy was an immigrant in Germany. He's an Austrian.
Yeah, I know.
He's an immigrant. He was fired on a German construction site.
That's so, careful of how you fire immigrants. Because
they might become your national leaders.
And go full on diabolical from day one.
Yeah. So, he set out that decree ultimately that, you know, to wrap things up, mm-hmm. that led to what you mentioned a little bit earlier, that because the SS were also found within German military ranks,
yeah.
they weren't the German military generals, who were mostly nobility.
Mm.
Because in Europe, the nobility class used to be predominantly employed in the military. They did not like these guys, actually. Because these guys were technically also from the first template that existed, which was known as the SA, if anyone knows about the SA. They were known as the brown shirts. But yeah.
Yeah. Here's the thing. Okay. The Qatari obviously has a magic, you know, has a magic trick. Hang on a second. Was that the Chinese? Was that the Chinese that brokered the deal before, between Saudi Arabia
and Iran?
Yeah, and Iran.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they did it in, no, it was China, but they had to do it somewhere else. They went to neutral.
Hang on a second. Didn't that take place in Beijing? I know the language that way, they didn't use English.
Yeah.
I think they both have interpreters. There was only Arabic and Mandarin. These guys were like, well,
and Persian in between somewhere.
Iran. So it's Persian, not Arabic.
Yeah.
Yeah. So here's the thing. Obviously the Qatari and the Chinese know a thing or two about, conflict resolution. So how about, we just will sit with these guys and ask them, what was your trick? Look, if I have kids at home that are throwing tantrum left, right, and center, and I can't keep them in check, and someone pays me a visit, and all of a sudden they are behaving, first of all, I'm sitting them down. What's your trick?
Mm.
So that seems like that's what the AU is lacking right now.
No, it is, because here's the thing, Amut. We don't know why and how Tshisekedi and Kagame could go and got onto their planes, respective Air Force Ones, and they flew all the way to Doha.
Mm-hmm.
And they're sitting in the same snapshot. Now, the thing is that helps us actually for us now, obviously, researched, you know, for this discussion, is that the Qatari press statement from the Emir, which is the Qatari king, cited the peace process that began in the Nairobi and in the Luanda peace processes.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Americans also cite this, but then they cite another thing that happened on 28 April. Now remember, 28 April, Hamoud, is literally a month after 18 March, after Doha.
Yeah.
Or is it 25 April? It's either 28 or 25 April. That's the date that is cited here.
When they said?
No, it was a pre-agreement to meet and sign this agreement. This agreement that took place 2 weeks back.
They met in Doha. They met the first time when they were talking about the deal being on, more like the agreement being in the pipeline under discussion. So when it was signed, that's when everyone went bananas. I'm like, no, this has been going on since the beginning of the year.
Actually, they cite something here since, it's not 31 October last year. I want to find that date here in the statement. Because they cite something from 24 March, Heads of Summit State, that happened after the Doha meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And then it flowed from, where's that April date that I saw? But anyway, so there was something that was signed between.
Qatar was in March.
Yeah, 18 March.
Yeah.
Then 24 March, 5 days after that,
mm-hmm.
something happened at the East African Community SADC Summit Heads of State after 18 March. That's 24 March.
Mm-hmm.
After 18 March, Qatar literally probably told these guys, hey, listen, you guys need to go talk.
Yeah.
But then we have to fast forward, because then somehow the Americans got involved in April. After
that iconic taste of Heineken, loved in Germany, Amsterdam, Argentina, and Namibia. That crisp and balanced taste of Heineken, loved around the world. Enjoy that refreshing thirst. Only made possible by Heineken's unique 5-star credentials. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace,
I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
You didn't hear that.
That was a loud one.
Yeah.
29 minutes.
Pretty amplified.
29 minutes left to the hour of 6, and we are still on the, you know, we're still on the, good news / bad news. I'm looking at it as good news because, for me, as long as, you know, people are not running for their lives, I'm good. The rest of, the rest of whether or not there's an ulterior motive, I don't care. So, before I chime in.
Yeah, just ending on the notion specifically. Okay. Here it is. Yeah. So I'm just going to read it as is verbatim. So the signing of the agreement obviously took place, was attended by the African Union chairperson Mahmoud Ali Youssouf. That's the agreement that was signed 2 weeks back. The Togolese foreign minister Robert Doucy. And also representing Doucy, the Togolese foreign minister was representing the AU, and the Qatari minister of state, Mohammed bin Abdulaziz Al Khulaifi, they were the observers. Who signed it was the foreign minister of DRC, Therese Kayikwamba Wagner, signed it on the behalf of DRC, and the foreign minister of Rwanda, Olivier Nduhungirehe, signed it on behalf of Rwanda, and it was obviously witnessed by the American's Secretary of State, Marco Rubio. Where does this agreement come from? The ministerial signing of the peace agreement marks a historical milestone in the pursuit of peace and prosperity for the DRC, Rwanda, and the broader Great Lakes region of Africa. Building upon the declaration of principles signed by both parties on 25 April. The agreement reflects months of sustained negotiations that were led by Boulos, Massad Boulos, the observer. He was the chief African advisor, Massad Boulos, on behalf of the Americans. He's the American advisor that was appointed. Now, stepping in from this, Helmut, 25 April, 24 March and 18 March was obviously now the timeline that we all see now reflecting in the documents that you and I have. We still as much don't know what it took to bring these two presidents together. We don't know if it was headmaster or principal tactics and behavior that was deployed, or it technically was a scenario like it was highlighted in the peace agreement as it is contained in our literature today, where they cited achieve the neutralization of these belligerent stakeholders on the ground, which is the FARDC and the FDLR on both sides. Ensure that you guys communicate, because they even speak about cooperating in intelligence exercises and activities regarding that region. It lays it out in that agreement. They should share intelligence with each other in terms of the maintenance of peace and stability in that region. Rwanda has to ensure that they de-escalate from their defensive posture.
Mm-hmm.
DRC has to neutralize the FDLR, which is the M23 affiliated militia group.
Mm-hmm.
Which technically represents the Banya Mulenge. And DRC has to absorb the FARDC, the guys that they appointed to counter the FDLR in terms of that proxy battling and proxy fighting in Eastern DRC. They have to absorb those guys into the army. They have to absorb those guys also into the police.
Now, please just leave them in the army.
Well, if you look in the American context, Hamoud, many of the military veterans that fought in, that were involved in Afghanistan and in Iraq, those guys were employed directly into the American police service. Yeah.
How's that going?
Services, because each state has its own particular sort of like budget for its police forces.
Now, let's talk about let's talk about something. Wanna take a call?
Let's take the call. Let's take the call. It's been a long time.
Yep. Eagle FM, hui afternoon.
Angabona.
Knew it was going to be a featuring.
Angabona, I can't believe that you fell into that trap of Helmut, who said hui afternoon.
Nene, we know we are now accustomed to that culture. It's very easy to form the habits and adapt the culture. Well, this, which is good, actually.
Yeah.
So otherwise, how are you doing, people?
I'm all right, my son, Angabona. How's your side?
Yes. Fine, man. Why is it only when the war is coming, they look at men, and then all these other things? No wonder why men are so few.
That is true. That is true, Angabona.
The there are a lot of women there who are not even having men to marry or to fall in a relationship and things like that. And then now, so many are dying.
Mm.
I mean, I could answer that, but then we'll turn this show into the morning one. But go on.
Yeah?
I mean, I could answer that, but we'll turn this show into the morning show. So just go on.
It's okay, no. So let's turn it into morning show.
No, Angabona, because...
Because
there's a scale also of a humanitarian dimension that is...
That's very important because... See, honestly speaking, I don't know who's so stubborn among those people who are at war.
Mm.
Uh-huh.
And we all know very well that, thank God for Iran, at least Iran could defend herself.
Mm.
And they really defended themselves. Those bases, those American bases that were attacked, are they not in Qatar?
There's one in Qatar. There's... two in Iraq. There is one, I think, in Kuwait, or is it UAE?
Yeah, Kuwait also.
We don't have that one in Namibia.
We don't have it in Namibia, Angabona, but it's right next door to us in Botswana.
That one that you see there, you think it's the embassy, that one.
Well, we use that word as embassy, Angabona. Yeah, But you can call it a compound.
That one is the army camp, that one.
And you just see a bunch of guys in suits.
Oh, yeah.
The suits are the giveaway.
That one is not an embassy. It's an embassy, by deception.
But the military bases that we'll be comparing it to, if we classify that as military bases, because if you look at countries that host military bases, like foreign military bases, especially Djibouti is a very well-known, more like host of a lot of foreign military bases. Military bases are huge.
The largest one on the continent is in Uganda.
They are huge, and they have they have Apache helicopters, they have, they have their fighter jets, they have armed military men just walking around with guns. We don't see that here.
The helicopter can be inside there. Who are you going to see them?
That would be difficult to fly out without waking up everyone in plane window.
No! They will fly. No, they are silent voices.
A chopper? No, we don't have one that's on silence. Yes, smartphones, yeah. Yes. Chopper, nah.
So there are silence, you will not hear.
Mm.
You will think it's the plane that's coming from South Africa wanting to land in the Crestris Freedom or whatever. What is the
Eros.
They used to be called what? Crest Freedom.
Fresh what?
What is that name of Dwight?
Which one, Angabon?
Before it was named Eros. The Crest Freedom.
Yeah, it was named after a guy, that airport.
Yeros
Airport was a military airport.
Really?
It was a military airport.
They used to call it the Crest Freedom.
Eros became a civilian airport only after independence because Hosea Kutaku was literally the civilian airport. That's why Hosea Kutaka was so far away and Eros was here for immediate response.
Yeah. That one had to be far away because it's a military kind of.
Yeah. And that one was easier. And that one is supposedly, if you look at strategically, that one is easier. No, this one was easier to defend versus that one.
So now, let them come to the realization that war is a crime against humanity.
Mm.
So those who are doing it, even though they are adamant, so let them repent. Eh? They don't repent, we follow them up.
And I mean, Angabona, just before you go, the important thing obviously here has been how quickly this peace deal had been signed, because for the next 3 months from June, 27 June, next, if we count, 27 July 1, August 2, September 3, 27 September, they have to observe a whole pre-process of the de-armament, de-escalation, enhanced cooperation between the two countries. So as to ensure that this peace process technically has tangible benefits to that region.
Not only to that region, to our region.
Mm-hmm.
Especially DRC. You know, DRC is very close to us. Mm.
Yeah.
The other time, we could not have intervened with Namibia and Zimbabwe. So we could be something difficult to have perhaps regained more strength and things like that. And that work would have been stopping our doorstep here.
Yeah.
So we need to be just very careful and see how to mobilize men, not women.
Mm.
Men.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they go there and die more, then we have few of men, and then the women start scrounging for the men who are few.
Yeah, lucky are those ones that survive.
That becomes a problem again.
Yeah.
And that also leads to gender-based violence. I've read an article that says people, women, men are few, they're dying in the war, they're dying in the life, health, whatever.
Yeah, but nationally, our statistics is, I mean, we're almost 50-50 in terms of, the population between between male and female gender.
So, you mean the population is almost similar?
We're almost 50-50. We don't have that of, that much of a wider gap between male and female. Mm.
But when you look at the life expectancy, the men is living less than the women.
We advise that if you want to live longer, just stay single. I mean, look at the Pope.
Yeah, they do. Because if you look at the social sector, when they're contributing all these other things, men die early. I was just looking at the demographic, what is it? The one for Ministry of Health and all these things. The report say that men live lesser years than women.
Yeah, that's also that's been observed globally, that women have a long life expectancy compared to men.
Mm-hmm,
yeah.
So the same applies to the.
Yeah, I mean, these are natural things. It's not like we have control over it or women.
Yeah, but because of your smoking and drinking and all these other things, bad lifestyle.
You clearly have not met a lot of millennials and Gen Zs.
I think you can control that with this one.
Yeah, you can. You can only just have to, you know.
It's time to win your share of $500,000 Namibian dollars in prizes with Windhoek Beer. Find one of the 100% real quotes broadcast across Namibia, on billboards, in stores, in newspapers, and on social media. Buy any Windhoek Beer, SMS the underliner code to 75050, or scan the QR code to enter on WhatsApp. So, spot the quote, grab a Windhoek Beer, and you could win. Windhoek, real beer for real people. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly. T's and C's apply.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression.
Welcome back. TK, let's wrap it up.
So, tell me, have you remember this question? Now, who actually surrendered between Israel and Iran and the United America?
Nothing about surrender. Say they just said. Oh, that, I mean, it's a peace deal that was. You know, they reached a ceasefire deal.
Yeah, No, let's tell it the way it is. The first time when the American when Iran responded.
Yeah.
The following day, was the American not say the Trump was not saying that yes, the Supreme Leader for we know it has been what? The following day or so after 2-3 days. They surrender. The Indian nation is that no. Yeah, it's, I realize that this is the end of the year. God bless you, Iran. And what to the end of the second. In fact, they even mentioned the Third World War.
But actually, if we use the word surrender, would be speculating because it was never, it's not something that was admitted formally by neither party.
Just like those clips that we were showing us, you listened to us yesterday, that about how they were lying, and then now they changed their network. Thank you, guys.
Not a problem, Angabona. Thanks for coming, sir.
It's time to win your share of 500,000 Namibian dollars in prizes with Windhoek Beer. Find one of the 100% real quotes broadcast across Namibia on billboards, in stores, in newspapers, and on social media. Buy any Windhoek Beer, SMS the underliner code to 75050, or scan the QR code to enter on WhatsApp. So, spot a quote, grab a Windhoek Beer, and you could win. Windhoek, real beer for real people. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly. T's and C's apply.
Coming back there, dear listeners, from the short ad break, and ultimately we are about almost 10 minutes out from the top of the hour at 6. This is the Home Run, your drive time station, specifically on your number one talk radio station, that being Eagle FM. And we've been looking into what was the magic sauce that was technically rolled out by Marco Rubio or the American, political establishment to get the Congolese, apologies for the, slight distortion there in the over enthusiasm in the description, to get the Congolese and the Rwandans to sit at a negotiating table. Besides the other magic source that we did not see, and we are still trying to understand where that magic source is, from the Qataris back in March of, on 18 March, at the start of this year. The reason why we are fixated on this particular discussion is because you look at the language that is contained within the peace agreement between the two sides. The peace agreement itself outlines specifically, as I obviously encapsulated it, there is border integrity that has to be respected at all times in order for this peace deal to technically take fruition and ultimately to be allowed to mature. A second scenario is ultimately dearmament or neutralization of some of the rebel entities in the DRC landscape, meaning in DRC's borders, which is obviously the FDLR, like I said, of the FLDR, one of the two, the acronyms. The other one is the FARDC, which is the Congolese Army appointed proxy fighters militia to help in combating M23/FLDR or FDLR. The scenario of this is also that Rwanda has to also, illustrate some aspect of peaceful coexistence with the Western neighbor, that is, DRC. And it's a notion in terms of firstly achieving stability, peace, and the necessary sort of like, peaceful neighborhood in the Great Lakes area of the African continent, in order for economic integration to take place. Because economic integration in this peace agreement, guys, is like at 0.8 or 0.7 or point something. But it's like in below 0.5. Economic integration is like, they know it's like the last thing to try and achieve immediately. Because like we highlighted a lot more or a lot earlier, there is already a strategic interest against any other country that obviously tries to find some sort of economic benefit from the African continent is that the Chinese are already sort of like dominating extraction in the DRC scenario. Now, we obviously cited a lot of similar scenarios, similar details, similar developments. This development in itself is a unique one because it's so abruptly, it happened so quickly. It was almost like a band-aid or a patch and solution for a, you know, for flat tire. Because it was so quick, Helmut. Literally, it was so quick. 20 years. I think Trump didn't pay attention to it in his first term because he was trying to obviously, you know, have a bromance with, what's the guy's name from North Korea? Kim Jong-un.
Oh yeah, Kim. Oh, they had a very good time.
Yeah, they had a good time. Do you remember the photos that they had
in North Korea?
No, when they went to Vietnam.
Oh, yeah. Wait.
They were walking right next to each other, chatting, looking like best buddies. They're in, yeah, it was Vietnam. They went to Vietnam for that negotiations.
The first US president to...
To meet and speak to a North Korean leader.
Yeah.
Now, that obviously means, you know, we Africans must be really impressed. Firstly, it shows us, why couldn't the AU do this?
There are a lot of answers. There are a lot of answers to that question.
Yeah.
One of them being, they say, you know, there's a very nice, nice and interesting 2019 article from the Institute for Security Studies. From back 2019, the Institute of Public Policy Research is an institute, a risk analysis kind of an organization, peacekeeping and rebuilding, governance and conflict analysis. They're headquartered in Pretoria, South Africa, but they also have a significant presence in East Africa.
Yeah. And again, most of their researchers now, like you cited, are based in South Africa, and they are based in, where's the other one? It's most the ISS, Africa.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think some of the guys are based in Kenya, Egypt, and there's no one, I think, in Nigeria.
No, I don't think there's any.
They don't have a contributor from Nigeria.
I don't think so.
But they've got Zimbabweans, they've got South Africans, and Kenyans, and Egyptians.
In this article, they try to look at, they were basically looking at they were more of a, somewhat of a sleek way of asking the AU what it thinks about a significant military, foreign military bases presence on the African continent. Mm. And, whether or not that's a threat to sovereignty of, not only the AU, but, different African countries.
Yeah.
And, one thing they, they point to a lot of reasons why a lot of countries, allow foreign military installations in their countries. And, because you find a lot of them, a lot of them scattered across the continent. Again, having military alliance in every country, the AU would be, somewhat threatening a country's sovereignty if they told them, who to sign a military agreement with and who not to.
Yeah.
So obviously every country has the right to determine, who it signs, it signs a military alliance with. Every country has the right to do that. Namibia has the right to do that. Botswana has the right to do that.
Yeah.
Of course, there are going to be a lot of criticism from the neighboring countries, as you'd expect, because, again, not everyone is going to be happy with that decision. Now, one thing they point out is a lot of African countries that have foreign military installations on their land, is they have that for two reasons. One, security from a bunch of trigger-happy guys running around with AK-47s, and that gun is tough. Yeah. And two, money. These pieces of land are being rented out.
Yeah.
And countries are making millions from it. So you're looking at two things here. Financial security and military security. That obviously a bunch of foreign guys are coming to provide. That means it can be argued that these two things are being sought by AU member states elsewhere because AU can provide these two things.
Mm. And another particular scenario that's also puzzling, Helmut. Remember when I complained the other time, which was back in last week? No, not last week. The week before last. We once again spoke about factories and discussions in terms of, you know, industrialization in a Namibian context.
Mm-hmm.
Which was where I mentioned to you the aspect of why have you never seen a Namibian reinvent a gun or a firearm?
Yeah.
Okay, it's a negative item. Let me highlight that to you, dear listeners. I am not anyone that's pro-gun ownership. But if we really want to see aspects of industrialization, usually the template that has existed in the world is that much of your technological advancements come through your military industrial complex.
Yeah.
So you build an engine for tough environments out there. You build the chassis somewhere else. You can buy the tires. You can source them from South Africa. But everything else you can try and make here locally, because you have your own iron ore. Yes, I know that one entity that recently opened up that is making renewable or carbon-free iron and steel products. But you can tap into that, because South Africa also produces steel. Now, South Africa's got one of the world's best military industrial companies, Denel, that produces some, you know, products that the South African government sells to other countries.
Yeah.
Now, here's the thing, Hamoud. It's not to say that we should now try and play, what was that movie from Nicolas Cage? God of War. No? Lord of War. It's not God of War. God of War is the game. For us to not play Lord of War antics, or what was the other one? The other one was there was another guy that was also a famous gun runner. They still exist, but
what's this? The Lord of War movie was based on Victor Bout.
Yeah, but citing back to the Middle Eastern conflicts that Israel fought with all those Arabic neighbors around it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Speaking of which, why are the Qatari not coming in on that one? I can take you back. I can take you back for the whole hour on that one.
If I was the Qatari, I would have said, you know what, guys? You know, I like my corner. You know, I've had a World Cup here in 2022. You know, I'm not about to rattle any cages. The dimension there is because a lot of German Second World War tanks, Helmut,
mm-hmm.
ended up in many of the conflicts against the Israelis.
They ended up somewhere in the Middle East?
They were in the Syrian army. They were in the Jordanian army. They were in the Egyptian army, slightly. Because the tank that the Israelis manufacture today, which is their own, was a version that they only brought in from the 70s, I think. But the 60s, the Israelis got literally British and American tanks, just like that. You know, they bought the hardware. And the other guys bought hardware from Germany, or not from Germany directly, but they got German Second World War tanks that were good technology in the 1940s, but not in the 1960s. Which is obviously one of the particular scenarios also, because remember, that question that Uncle Bonner asked us just a little while back, who actually won that, you know, that, that tennis match in firing rockets at each other?
Kapena uondando dhivulife putha ShopRite. Ela rakano jitu okukupa uondando dhilipevi miipumbi watopumga esko kehe. Tarako litera mbali dhomaga liko kujago Right Brand Sunflower. Hamano na khetatu neosenda omirako ngwe no ngwe kehe. Oshuwa okapa kikonyama unzi Maton Peg. Khetatu no ngwe neosenda omirako ngwe no ngwe mo keiji. Tinda okufuta shivulife po ShopRite Price. Virgosu oga hamano gayulae nuvo. Oko ShopRite akuki.
Six 6:00 on the dot.
Yeah, so just where
Middle East, yeah. German tanks.
And it is now also been the same antic of what recently happened, because in the Ukraine conflict where Russia is obviously there present in eastern Ukraine.
And believe me, the presence have been loud these days.
Remember what the Americans tried to do to the Germans. They tried to force the Germans to sell Leopard tanks
to
the Ukrainians. And the Germans literally have a law in their constitution that says they may not sell armaments to a country who's going to use it in a war directly.
Then what's the point of selling armaments?
Exactly. It's a thing.
No
that
one buys armaments for decorations. They are really expensive.
Exactly. Now, the Germans had sold a bunch of Leopard 1 tanks to the Belgians. And the thing is just sitting there. Now the new German chancellor is trying to find a way in terms of how those tanks can't be bought back from the Belgians. Because it's just standing in a warehouse. Bought back. They refurbish them and they send them to the Ukrainians. But it once again is the same law that he also has to deal with back in Germany. Mm-hmm. Just like the German expenditure discussion that led to the German early elections in February this year, that led to Olaf Scholz obviously losing the chancellorship, or the chancellery position. And that ultimately led to Friedrich Merz coming in.
Yeah.
And Merz has got it successful, has got it over the line. To expand the German budget. And remember, this is in contravention of a specific law in German law that says they can't, there's a budget ceiling that the German government has to abide by.
You should look up, jokes coming out of Germany based on that.
Yeah.
Like, what, me? Make weapons again? Well, third time is the charm. No, this time we may, you know, just make sure no one has a mustache, you know, we do donut, you know. But,
only you can make those jokes. I'm sorry, man. I can't.
Look, we have got to learn from history.
I can't put my sauce in that joke. Yeah. I really can't.
Yeah, so, we also have to watch out for painters, construction workers. Okay, you know what? We have to go.
Or actually a guy that had done all that before he became a politician.
That are politicians.
Yeah.
Yeah. And their work experience is in painting, construction work. Yeah. Watch out for those ones. We don't want to do that again.
Yeah.
So 3 minutes past the hour of six, that brings us to the end of Home Run. And one thing to pick from this is, you know, I don't know what your thoughts are on this whole, Washington, DRC, Rwanda deal, but, for me, as long as there are no guns exploding and, innocent women and children are not caught in a crossfire, whatever economic screwing they will have to do to each other there, I don't really care. Which I think it's worth looking at it as a significant step towards the right direction.
Mm.
Yeah, because, if there are bombs exploding, no one is talking, then that would be very difficult to, you know, that'd be very difficult to, you know, that's be difficult to, you know, difficult to deal with, even for the AU. And also, I think to some degree, even to, you know, for the AU, this, for both the AU, East African Community and SADC, this is also an advantage. Because, maybe for the first time, these two guys will sit at the AU summit in the same room where not one of them is, you know, attending via Zoom. So, for me, until Monday, same time, same place, on your favorite radio station, Google FM.
On my side,
a good weekend.
And on my side, guys, I'll see you on Sunday with my Sunday morning take. Obviously, that'll be from 5 to 7 a.m. Obviously, we have some nice tunes, but also some insightful discussions, obviously, to help explain how the world works around us. On that note, enjoy the rest of your programming in our company.
It's time to win your share of 500,000 Namibian dollars in prizes with Windhoek Beer. Find one of the 100% real quotes broadcast across Namibia on billboards, in stores, in newspapers, and on social media. Buy any Windhoek Beer, SMS the underliner code to 75050, or scan the QR code to enter on WhatsApp. So, spot a quote, grab a Windhoek Beer, and you could win. Windhoek, real beer for real people. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly. T's and C's apply.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the I.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM.